Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to what is being paid attention to, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is Wednesday, December the 8th in the year 2010 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight's topic is ADHD, third-party advocates, and educators' experience. And with us in our virtual studio is Melissa Malin, which we'll kind of we're going to jump into our topic in here in just a second. Before we do that, I just want to make a couple announcements. Be attuned to visiting attentiontalkradio.com for upcoming shows. We are in the process of scheduling some things out far in advance, so there'll be some regular updates coming to you. Also, there is some limit on the number of shows that we can post, and if you'd really like to be current on what's going on at Attention Talk Radio, consider going to attentionradio.com and sign up for our newsletter. With that, you'll get weekly or biweekly updates as far as what the show schedule looks like, some announcements on our end, and in addition to that, we're going to probably have weekly updates of just things that are going on that you might want to be aware of in the ADHD community, maybe different webinars, podcasts, et cetera. So with that behind us, again, with us today is Melissa Malin. Melissa is an expert on attention issues and student achievement. She advocates for, writes about, and coaches students with attention issues in education. She's a seasoned consultant with over 20 years of experience in student, parent, and teacher coaching. Melissa has a master's degree in counseling psychology and is a doctoral student in adult education in the Department of Organizational Leadership, Policy, and Development at the University of Minnesota. Also, I lost my notes. Here we go. Melissa is currently investigating how advocates of ADHD students find resources that go beyond ADHD diagnosis and students' rights to special education. Many underutilized ADHD resources exist that provide information about conditions that influence the expression of ADHD behavior, such as misdiagnosis, giftedness, psychology, diet, exercise, and environment. Melissa's advocacy for students includes coaching parents with regard to school selection, educational planning, and teacher relationship building. So with that, Melissa, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. This is great.
I'm very excited about this, and I have to tell this to everybody. When Melissa and I started talking about doing the show, I was ecstatic about the topic. And as we've gotten into it a little bit more, and I've been thinking about it, I'm really excited because in the stuff that I've read and the things that are out there, people don't necessarily talk about a third-party advocate the way we're going to about tonight, so I think it's particularly valuable. And I will also give everybody a heads up. It looks like we're going to have a lawyer on the end of January to talk about your rights, ADHD rights in the school place and the workplace. We're going to talk about the actual laws and sometimes how that's applied, which is like a higher level, but this is a little bit more where the tire meets the road today. So, Melissa, I want to start out and just tell us about your role as an advocate for students with ADHD in school.
Sure. Well, I'm an adult educator and a coach. I work with parents, children, and adolescents to improve behavior and achievement in school. I'm not a psychologist, so I don't conduct clinical assessments or make medical or psychological diagnoses. Instead, as an educator and an advocate, I support parents and teachers as they learn about ADHD and how that impacts their students' achievement in school. For example, I provide information about the student's opportunity, if there is one, for special education services, as well as information about ADHD and the barriers that ADHD brings to the student who is achieving in school or having trouble achieving in school, I should say.
I think one of the what's powerful about you in this situation is you do have an educational background.
Mm-hmm.
And as somebody who's advocating and getting involved with parents in schools, it's I'm not going to say it's adversarial, but you kind of have a foot in both doors, which is really nice. You kind of speak their language, but you're also there to support the student. To me, that's what's really powerful about this.
Well, thank you. Yes, I do have a background in counseling and working with diverse and high-risk youth who have had challenges in school. And I also feel very strongly that schools can be flexible and schools can work with students. There's a lot of pressure on schools and teachers to work with students to develop individual plans and to make sure that each student can achieve, that all students can achieve. And by working as an adult educator, I team with parents so that they can build a relationship with the teacher, which is collaborative and geared toward problem solving to help each individual student achieve at the highest level that he or she can.
You know something, you said something that I thought I just really want to highlight. You used the word pressure. There's a lot of pressure on the teachers. And, you know, I've never been a teacher myself, but I can only imagine, you know, teaching a class. I mean, heck, I got a 9-year-old in third grade, and I can only imagine having, you know, 25 of those kids. And, you know, they're all different, and they're all special, and I've got to conduct a class and understand all their needs. And I can see there's a lot of pressure with this, and I think in our conversation, what I think is really kind of cool is you as an advocate can walk in and actually help the teacher come up with ways to kind of be kind of creative and help solve those problems as opposed to that burden being on their own. So would you say you actually kind of help relieve the pressure of the teachers to an extent?
Well, yeah, I think that's really a goal, is to become a partner with the teacher. You know, like you said, the teacher's in a difficult situation. There's so many things to do during the class day. They're you know, held accountable to all the testing and the behavior, I mean, of all these students. Often the classrooms are overloaded. So it is difficult to be the teacher. And then to be the parent of a child who is challenged in school and who is also very challenging to the teacher, I mean, it can be stressful to be that parent, you know, because you're feeling bad for your child because your child is suffering and maybe not achieving. You're feeling bad for the teacher because your child is maybe one of the more difficult kids in the classroom. And then you also feel defensive because you're sitting in a meeting hearing about all these, you know, challenges that your child is bringing to the classroom. And, you know, who's supposed to solve all of this and how do you go about doing it? And I think that's where an advocate can come in and hear the teacher's perspective and hear the child's perspective and really work as a third person to sort of help them develop some problem-solving approaches that will work for everybody.
Yeah, and I don't mean to drone on for everybody out there, but I'm kind of having a little aha that I didn't really think about before. By you kind of coming in and having a background, again, you're helping to bring creative ideas and solutions to the teacher so they're not in alone, as opposed to, hey, listen, it's your responsibility, teacher, to take care of my ADHD child in this class. I mean, that's kind of a burden where you walk in and Melissa, it sounds like you can say, hey, listen, have you thought about this and thought about that? So it just it takes a lot of pressure off and really is very helpful. So this is cool.
Exactly.
Go ahead and finish it. I was go here.
Well, and I would also just like to stress, too, that in working with the teacher and the parent, there's still an emphasis on holding the student to high expectations and to performing in the classroom. But understanding and identifying those supports or, you know, what can be done to help the student get past some ADHD barriers, that's also one of the main goals.
Absolutely. Well, how did you become involved in advocating for students?
Oh, how did I become involved? Well, a very long story and a shortened version is that I have a child who, although he doesn't have ADHD, he's very challenging and has been. He's 11, but has been since he was a young child. I went to the University of Minnesota where they have a fabulous project on, you know, child development and preschool behavior project, that sort of thing, and I asked for help. I said, I'm a parent. I'd like some help. How can I help my child, you know, thrive in school because he's very excitable and runs around and causes a lot of excitement for other students and disruption and so forth. And I went from person department to department, and I ended up in the department that I'm in, and they said, this would be great. Why don't you come and join our department, and you can study that. And that's how I ended up in the program that I'm in, and that's how I followed my passion for helping those students in school and helping the adults who work with them to make sure those students can achieve.
Great story. Voila, you're volunteered.
It's true.
I tell you what, Melissa, I'd like to kind of run to a commercial break and come back, and we can start talking about, like, share some examples and stuff. But before we go, for anybody who's listening to the show who might want to get in contact with you, how would they reach you?
My website is a great place to reach me. That's www.axylu.com, axylu.com, or my phone number, 651-442-6082.
All right. With that, we'll go to commercial break, and we'll come back and talk about examples. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
This is your ADHD information station. Attention Talk Radio. News, updates, and alerts sent right to your inbox. Sign up now at attentionradio.com.
Flying into life's storms with ADD can leave you swirling in chaos, feeling lost and alone. But Steve Gundy is here to say you're not alone, and there's a horizon waiting for you. Steve Gundy Coaching Practice, LLC, at 574-855-1800 provides the necessary support and tools you need to maneuver your way through the storms of life. Call Steve today at 574-855-1800 and schedule your free 30-minute session. That's 574-855-1800. Fly through life's storms to a new horizon.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
I'm Jeff Copper, host of Attention Talk Radio, here to talk to you about CopyTalk.com, a voice dictation service. This is not just some voice dictation software. It's a real dictation service by people who type whatever you want. When I need to document something, all I do is hit speed dial on my cell or work phone and start speaking. The folks at CopyTalk will type it up and email it back to me that day. The best part is I can dictate as many 4-minute messages as I want, all for one flat monthly fee. Go to copytalk.com/ATR, enter Jeff Copper as the referrer's name, and sign up for the free trial account today. If you tell them I sent you, then you'll get $20 off the monthly subscription for as long as you keep the service.
Could hiring an attention coach really help you move forward? Does a child get wet when they dive into a swimming pool? You can get started moving forward today. Just call Dig Coaching Practice at 813-837-8084 and schedule a free consultation. Tell us you heard about us on Attention Talk Radio and get 50% off your discovery session. For more information, visit digcoaching.com. Don't delay, do it today. You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everyone, to Attention Talk Radio. With us today is Melissa Malin, and we're talking about third-party advocates and educators' experience. It's been a great discussion so far. Melissa, I'd kind of like to jump in. Can you share an example of how you advocated for and coached a student?
Sure. You know, often parents come to me when they're looking for resources to help support a student improve behavior and achievement in school. And in one case, I worked with a student who actually demonstrated ability and achievement that matched his grade level, so he wasn't qualified for special education services. However, the student would, for example, maybe turn in 8 assignments and get an average of 90%, 95% of an A, but would not turn in maybe 2 assignments, which of course would get a 0. And for a final quarter grade, he would end up with a C. The parents and the teachers were frustrated because the student, you know, is capable of earning a final A, but, you know, they considered that he maybe wasn't motivated or, you know, just didn't do what he was required to do to organize his work. And in working with the parent and the teacher and the student in this case, the first place we started was that the child has an ADHD diagnosis. And because he's diagnosed, he actually has a true challenge with organizing information across time. And talking about that with the parent and the teacher, and, you know, they finally came to accept and realize that it's not because the student isn't motivated or he doesn't care. He just truly has a challenge with executive function or organizing materials across time and, you know, persisting to turn things in or, you know, being able to find a paper in the backpack, that sort of thing. So the problem that we decided to help the student solve was to figure out what supports could be put in place so that the student would have some sort of built-in organization that would allow him to be reminded and organized in a way that would, you know, help him achieve turning in all of his assignments, which then erased his grade.
And this, I got to believe that this is a classic ADHD problem where you've got a child with ADHD who is mm-hmm. relatively smart and doesn't have a problem mm-hmm. with the test. But, mm-hmm. you know, just, you know, the piece of paper from home just can't seem to make it into the teacher's
right.
hand.
Right.
And yet what you're saying is because they were high level, they weren't really qualifying for IE plan or any other special assistance. So you're really kind of stuck in no man's land. You can't get the exceptions, but you still have this problem, right?
Right. And, you know, I think, you know, in talking with teachers, many teachers are flexible and they want to help the student. But like I said, the student is performing at his own grade level. So his ability does not fall in the category of needing special education services, which is appropriate. However, the ADHD leaves him with an executive skill problem, which means initiating a task, having consistent working memory, self-monitoring of their behavior, organizing activities across time, and being able to just find, page 74 in the book or find my paper in my backpack. And adults tend to get angry with these students and think, well, you're smart, you're getting A's, why don't you just turn in those last two assignments? However, it's very important to realize that this student has a true challenge with just performing exactly that skill. And if we can provide the student some supports, then the student can do those things and the grades go up.
So in this particular situation, can you share with us some of the supports that you were able to kind of work with the teacher and the parents to kind of put in place so that the homework would make it from home into the teacher's hands?
Right. So in working with the student and the teacher and the parent, some training goes on with all three members. And it's not a situation where we want to excuse the student from turning in work or completing work. Instead, we want to hold the student to high standards, but teach the student some skills that he will take with him through his life that will help him, continue to do this in high school, college, and so forth. I like to use Dawson Aguirre's book, Executive Skills in Children and Adolescents, because it gives many, many explicit ideas for determining, how to determine the student barrier and give step-by-step approaches. With this specific student, we took, for example, a long-term project. The student had to turn in a four-week project in social studies. And instead of, like other students, turning something in every Friday and leaving that up to the student alone, we decided to break the activities down on a daily basis where he would turn in, specific things each day. And the parent knew and was in communication with the teacher that the student would turn these specific things in. Also, the student was allowed to do the work on a laptop and email things. So that was there was sort of a built-in organizational tool in filing something in the computer and then sending it out. Also, the calendar system was used to remind the student, it's the end of the day Monday. Did you mail in your, part B of this week for the social studies project? The student also was very comfortable and engaged in using a mobile device such as an iPod, and that device was used to give him audio cues, so timers that reminded him, it's 7 o'clock on Monday, you've got the next hour to make sure you finish this section of the social studies work, and then the parent was also reminded. So, breaking things down, not just in a list, but giving specific steps across time with reminders and a way for the student to deliver the work that didn't rely on paper and pencil and the backpack that
so,
really helps the student.
So am I to understand that this student was allowed to carry an iPod around in school?
There are a lot of schools that are allowing students to use iPods to support them in the classroom on many, many different topics. And, I'm finding it just really wonderful when you meet one-on-one with the teacher and the parent and you sort of develop this relationship and become a team that's working to provide interventions and supports for the student. The student can bring it in, can use it at the beginning of the day or at the end of each class period to sort of log in what assignments are coming up or, to check in what was due, that sort of thing. There are rules that can be applied to iPods just like any other toys or things that kids bring to class, and they're very helpful.
The thing that I can't help but think on this is if you're a teacher and you've got 25 kids running around, if you let one iPod into the class, everybody's going to want to, and while one student might need the alarms and stuff, the other ones that might be bringing the iPod are not bringing them for those types of structures.
Right.
And so it's easy. It's easier to say, listen, they're not allowed in class, period.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
what I'm taking from this is this is just an example of how, as an educator coming as a third-party advocate to be able to sit down with the teachers and discuss the types of situation, you can sometimes work through some of that stuff and allow something like an iPad that's a valid structure for this particular student to be used in order for
right.
them to achieve what they need to achieve. And at the same
right.
time, not just being in an adversarial relationship with the parent, just saying, listen, this kid just got to have this, and actually hearing a third-party advocate for the child. To me, that's what's really powerful about what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, I think it is nice, too, because, we're not just saying, oh, please let this child have an iPod. We're saying to the teacher, what are your concerns and what does the student need to do in order to achieve like all other students in your class? can we possibly use this piece of assistive technology, which, you know, there's a law about assistive technology, and it's encouraged in schools and, you know, required by the federal government that students who have special needs, and I know the student doesn't qualify for special education services, however, you know, he's been in meetings with the psychologist at the school and with the teacher, and even the principal was involved in one of these meetings. The student truly has an issue in demonstrating his ability to achieve. So, I mean, this tool was suggested as a tool to be used specifically for organizing his work and his delivery of work. And rules were placed on that, and, you know, the student comes into certain classrooms and checks the iPad at the door and uses it at the very end of the day when other kids are writing in their daily planners. This student's writing in the planner a little bit, but also mainly making his appointments set up on the iPad. And, you know, every student is different, and classrooms are teaching to individual student needs and programs, and I mean, there really wasn't any resistance to using it.
And I can see there wasn't, but at the same time, I know my son last year was in second grade, and I'm telling you, that teacher, it was, you know, you would go in there, you would ask her a question, and she would give you the answer. And if you say, listen, I don't understand, she'd repeat exactly what she said before, and you go, listen, if I would have got it the first time, I wouldn't be asking you again. It's not like I wasn't listening. You got to get a different way. And I, you know, sometimes they're just, this is the way you do it, don't kind of let go. And I can't help but think how powerful it can be for somebody like yourself to kind of walk in and kind of nudge them a little bit. So it's just not the parent doing battle.
In a very collaborative way. And you know, yes, when a teacher is saying that, I mean, that's just one of the first things I do with parents and the teacher is to say, please give us all of the concerns that you have about this student. We would like to hear everything. You know, don't hold anything back. And we're going to hold the student to high expectations because he's capable. However, let's figure out what the problems are in him performing, and let's figure out what we can do to work for, you know, make this work for everybody.
Excellent. Let's see. We got a little bit of time to go. I'd like to go to our last commercial break, and I'd like to, for the people in the chat room, if you've got a question, feel free to type a question, and if we got some time, we'll field it at the end. And for the callers that are on the line, we don't have anybody who's raised their hand. If you're on the phone and you've got a question, if you just hit one, it'll actually raise your hand. I can tell you if you want to ask Melissa a question. We go from there. So, again, before we go to break, real quickly, Melissa, how can somebody get in contact if they want to give you a buzz?
Well, they can use my phone number, which is 651-442-6082, or my website, www.axylu.com.
All right, we'll go to break, and when we come back, we'll talk about one other little example. So everybody, bear with us.
This is Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Okay, let's be honest here. How many times have you forgotten the wet laundry in the washer and it started smelling a little funky, so you had to wash it again, maybe even twice, in the same week? Well, you may be an AD Diva just like me. I'm Linda Rogley, and I founded the AD Diva Network for women with ADD-ish tendencies, especially those of us 40 and better. The AD Diva Network is a great place for support, connection, and a touch of whimsy. You can join us at addiva.net. That's addiva.net.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ari Tuchman, author of More Attention, Less Deficit, Success Strategies for Adults with ADHD. This is the only book actually written for adults with ADHD. Each chapter is divided into short articles, so you can read only the stuff you want in the order you want. I take lessons from the research and make them totally useful in your daily life. You can get a free PDF of the first chapter at adultadhdbook.com. Check it out.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. We have Melissa Malin on as our virtual studio today. We're talking about third-party advocates and educators' experience. Melissa, we got about 5 minutes left, and I know you have an experience working with, you know, a student on behavior in an IEP setting. Can you share that with our listeners?
Sure. So I was invited to an individual education plan or IEP meeting with parents, teachers, the principal, the psychologist. And this is a fourth grade student who was having problems, you know, with impulsive behavior in the classroom, although he had high achievement, so he was performing on grade level. there was a lot of discussion about what were, you know, really the issues that caused a frustration or problem for him. So what we did was I observed his behavior in the classroom for 2 hours, and I took notes on his behavior, on the teacher's interactions with him, and what was going on in the classroom environment, and just gave very objective feedback, you know, more agitated, less agitated, more frequency of, you know, impulsive behaviors, less, and just described what was going on. Now, the parents were able to use that very objective information, which did not include interpretations, and the parents used that, and they went back to the clinician who was medicating their child for anxiety and also ADHD, and they were able to, you know, use that information and make some interpretations that allowed them to adjust his medication, which ended up helping him calm his behavior greatly in the classroom. And then we also used that information to develop some coaching plans and some social skills and some executive skills planning for him.
It's interesting because you were actually physically in the classroom just observing it and taking some notes and sharing that both with parent and teacher in order to kind of improve that particular situation.
Well, I used an Excel spreadsheet, for example, and I just minute by minute just recorded objectively what I saw, and the parent had control of that information and shared it with their psychologist and their psychiatrist who was treating the child for ADHD. She also met with the teacher and talked about a couple of different things, and then we developed some behavioral skills planning for the child in the classroom, and then the clinician modified the medication and so forth by using that objective feedback.
And, you know, it's mental health professionals aren't necessarily going into the class environment to observe what's going on. It's really, in most situations, it's really just a teacher, and the teacher's got a bunch of stuff that's going on. So they're paying attention to the lesson plan, to different students, and to a particular student, so they don't necessarily focus on it. So just by being a third party and sitting there and just observing, you actually give unbiased, unfiltered information that's out there for people to use that seems to me can be nothing but helpful because it's more pure data as opposed to snippets or data points along the line based off of when a person was just either irritated or saw something. I'm not articulating that kind of correctly, but it certainly has less bias, so it seems to me an awful lot of value here.
Yeah, I think it's great because as educators, you know, I don't have a license to diagnose or provide mental health treatment and so forth. And in the classroom, those professionals usually aren't there. It's great to have just objective behavioral feedback. So the person who is licensed to make interpretations and make diagnoses and, you know, treat a person, those are the people that need to have the very objective information. And, yes, I completely paid full attention to this child for 2 hours. And the teacher is teaching 25 students. So it's very hard to actually do that if you're teaching the class, I think.
It is. And so I think it's the lesson today, and one of the reasons why I really want to have the show is, to me, there's a couple different levels. If you've got a child with ADHD, level one is what are your rights in the classroom? Number two is what's the real world, and like how does that all interpret? Because it doesn't necessarily work the way it's supposed to. And I would encourage you to check back because, again, I think we're going to have a lawyer on the show the end of January 1 just talking about the basic laws and then talking about real world. But this is the next level. It's okay. So when you're actually out there and you've actually kind of got a situation that may or may not fall in the bucket, sometimes bringing a third-party advocate in can be very, very powerful, particularly if they're an educator and can appreciate kind of both sides. So, Melissa, we've got about a minute to go. Anything else that you'd like to share with your listeners that you think that would be fine useful before we wrap it up?
Well, you know, I just like to say that students who are diagnosed with ADHD, there's a lot of research that says the combination of medication and cognitive behavioral training is what is the most effective in treating the student. So even if your student is medicated, that's only half of what can be done to make sure that your student can learn the skills necessary to be successful in school, in high school, and in college, and also in work. So I think it's very valuable and worth the time and effort.
And that's a great segue because next Friday we're having the EDGE people on from the EDGE Foundation to talk about what the foundation is and to talk a little bit about the research that they just released about the benefits of coaching for high school and college students. And we'll be talking a lot in that particular show about multimodal treatment and how it benefits. So with that, Melissa, thank you very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate
it.
This has been very helpful and informative.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
And again, your website?
www.axylu.com.
Excellent. That'll be that conclusion of this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.